Live from Idaville, this is Derailed Trains of Thought. Welcome to episode 146 of Derailed Trains of Thoughts, your premier podcast on storytelling.
For the creator and the consumer.
My name is Timothy Deal.
My name is Nick Hayden.
And Nick, we're coming from a pretty normal looking American neighborhood
today. Yeah, this is like downright familiar.
Homey, yeah. Like it's Rover Avenue, according to the street sign
okay,
over there.
Okay, yeah. A very nice, kind of just pleasant place. Yeah.
I almost feel like... You know, I said normal American. I almost feel like we may be back in time a little
bit. Yeah, it feels a little, yeah.
It feels a little bit more, like, settled. Like, there are actually kids playing outside.
It's a little bit like Stranger Things, but not as creepy.
Yeah. I mean, the only unusual thing is some kids over there have got a detective agency in their garage.
Cool. Oh, it's only a quarter.
Hey, that's not bad.
If we have a problem, we'll go over there.
I see the two kids in there, a guy and a girl. And I'm pretty sure I saw the girl threaten off a bully a little while ago. So
nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Interesting place we're at here. Hey, downtown Americana. That's great. I love it. How are you doing, Nick?
Doing pretty well. Enjoying fall break right now as we record. Apple Festival is momentarily around the corner.
Yes.
Yeah, so at least when we're recording.
When we're recording.
Out, this will not be.
It'll be long gone.
It'll be long gone. And you're in the home stretch.
Yes, but who knows, by the time this episode comes out, our baby might be here. So, yes, it's very strange period of time we're in right now. This feeling that knowing that there's a life-changing event on the horizon.
And but not yet.
But yeah, only a very general sense of when it's going to happen.
Yeah.
In our highly scheduled world, that's a very strange thing.
It is a strange thing. Like soon, everything will change, but we don't know quite when yet.
I can't imagine, like, yeah, you're going to graduate from college. I don't know when, but you're going to do it.
And sometime, a three-week period. Yeah, it'll be good.
Well, anyway, right now we've got a podcast to do, Nick.
Sounds good.
So let's do it. So let's go on into story school. So for story school today, do you have any idea what it is?
No idea.
We'll have to figure this out.
Yes. It's a mystery.
It is a mystery. In fact, it is mysteries.
Oh, ha ha.
Oh, we're so
fun time. Oh, wait.
We're so clever. No, mysteries is actually, I feel, a topic we've had on our potential topic list since like maybe the very beginning.
And we've talked about it from not directly, but like about revealing things and stuff like that.
And about how detectives are sometimes in procedurals, you like having your characters that you get to hang out with, and that's almost the attraction. But we figured it's a genre that deserves its own time in the spotlight.
It's a giant genre that some people just love, like, but we held off so long because while we've both read mysteries and watched mysteries, we don't feel particularly like we're deep in that world.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of mystery writers out there that I'm not familiar with their work at all. It's not a genre. It's funny. Mysteries as a kid were probably my go-to genre of books. Mm-hmm. So the first chapter books I read were almost always mysteries.
Yeah.
Because that was an easy thing for a kid to understand and a genre that you latch onto. It wasn't scary or intimidating like sci-fi fantasy, but my interests have gone way over that into that direction ever since late high school, early college.
It's interesting. I don't normally seek them out, but whenever I do read or watch them, I'm like, oh, this is great. Mm-hmm. But just, yeah, it's an interesting thing. So we're going to unpack some of why mysteries are so enjoyable.
Yeah. I thought it'd be interesting to talk about some of the positive features and maybe some negative features, pros and cons. But I thought it'd be interesting to start with this one article you found.
Yes.
That was discussing the theologian
J.I. Packer
and his interest in mystery books, which was surprising.
Detective fiction, yeah.
Detective fiction, which was surprising to some people.
Yeah, because he was, I think, quite the theologian, you know, did a lot of heavy talking and book writing and everything. But for fun and just for downtime, he'd always turn to crime novels, basically, to mystery novels. And he kind of had a big defense in this article about why that's a good thing. And he didn't say everyone had to, but he said, like, hey, I just need a break. This is great. And he had a variety of reasons he thought it was worthwhile to read such things.
And I kind of enjoyed how he put it at the end of his article. It's like, everyone needs something to relax them. I have my mystery books. You can watch your TV sitcoms and sports shows, which I find so dreadfully boring, and I won't judge you for it. So, but anyway, focusing on mysteries itself, I think one of the things he talked about was the wrongfully accused are exonerated, the evil people are caught.
The lines are pretty clean, right? You know, there's a bad guy out there. Good guy's going to get him. And that's what we like about him, that like, hey, there's justice done. Everyone wants justice. Everyone wants the bad guy to get caught. We don't want the bad guy to get away or get a slap on the wrist or anything. We're going to figure out, okay, who done it and what's he going to get for?
Yeah. Or if you're doing the Columbo where it's kind of flipping on that on its head, you know immediately who the murderer is. But the trick is, how is Columbo going to figure it out and connect the evidence to catch him? How it's less whodunit and more how catch him.
Well, and that's the other part. Like, there's this big draw of justice of, we think the world should work in a certain way, but also then there's just that puzzly aspect that you want to see, how do the pieces come together? It's a challenge for the reader. The readers, they know at some point it's going to be revealed, and like, but you want to see if you can beat their author, right?
Beat the detective, figure it out before he does his denouement. Yeah.
And I guess this, maybe we'll talk about this later. This brings up one of the interesting kind of, from a creator's point of view, dilemmas. How much do you give enough information that the audience can figure out, or do you withhold stuff so you can do the aha at the end?
Yeah, I imagine that's a matter of taste, and probably both for the reader and for the writer. I mean, I imagine there are probably some readers who don't want to put a whole lot of thought into trying to get ahead of the person. They like the surprises, they like the twists and turns and that kind of stuff.
I've always thought a little unfair. I think I mentioned way back sometime on the podcast, one of the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movies, I think it was the second one, that they didn't, you couldn't have figured out if you wanted to. They don't give you enough information. And I always found that frustrating. Like, if you're going to do a mystery, give me enough information. Maybe it's cleverly done, maybe you, but I feel like everything needs to be out in the open. And you shared a video with me about movie making and the mystery, about observing.
On the YouTube channel Cinema Sticks.
Okay. Just about that, letting the audience observe everything, like being fair. And I think that my thought is that mystery should be fair. Now that it can be a little, it can be tricky, it can have tons of red herrings, but when you find the answer, be like, oh, that's this, not like, oh, I guess I would never figure that out.
Yeah, the feeling that you saw all the pieces and you hadn't put them together yet, but you could have.
You could have. That it makes sense. And we reread it, you're like, oh, how clever the author is. It's all right there. And, you know, movies do this where they'll be like, they'll show you all the scenes previously. You're like, oh, yeah, there it is. And then it's that sort of, we talked about last episode, things get under your skin. You want everything to fit. And something you can't get to fit. Uh-huh. The prisoner, does it fit? You know?
Sure, sure.
The mystery is so satisfying because it clicks. All the moving pieces are like, oh, that's what that's there for.
And I agree, that can be very satisfying. I do wonder if that becomes a little tricky. I guess probably the reason why some writers don't do that. I wonder if people doing it for TV procedurals have a harder time setting all that up, doing that. I mean, a lot of police procedurals, the audience is finding information out at the same time as the police, and so they're kind of talking it out as they go.
I guess those are different types of mysteries. Like that sort of the procedural mystery, I have no problem with that because they're not being unfair. They're just, you're learning as the police learn.
Yeah.
Like, you're not trying to beat the police. You're just sort of, you are they. and that's a fun experience too, to be like, oh, I'm finding the clues, and eventually it'll make sense. Not this, like, in the more Agatha Christie style, you're like, it's all there. I just got to figure, oh, Ivy Tree.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that. Like, when you get to the end, you're like, oh, duh, I saw that, but then I thought about it once, but then I was hoodwinked because of a certain way it was written.
There was just enough misdirection, but the ingredients were all there.
Yeah.
You know, so you're talking about the one that really outlined everything was the one that was comparing the two different versions of Murder on the Orient Express. There was one from 1970s, I forget the exact year, and then the more recent one.
The
Kenneth Branagh one. Which the Kenneth Branagh one was a little bit more flashy and
modern, basically.
Modern, yeah. And that essay kind of favored the older style.
And he said he was kind of harsher than he meant to on the new book.
Yeah. An interesting counterpoint to that is the one that I sent you that was on Knives Out from that same panel. Because that one, he talks about how Hitchcock apparently wasn't a huge fan of the whodunit, which is interesting considering he did have mystery elements in a lot of his movies. But he didn't like the focus on information and the not figuring out till the very end stuff. He loved giving information to his audience, sometimes ahead of what his characters did.
For instance, on Let's Finally Watch This Season 2, we watched
Shadow of a Doubt.
And it basically starts pretty early, you know the answer. But that's the entire engine of the unsettledness.
Yes, it's true.
And Hitchcock liked to give you everything, so you just sort of like...
Is
the bomb going to explode? He gives this great example of, like, you have two people just talking and it'd be boring, you don't care. But if you know there's a bomb there and they're talking, you just ramp up and up the whole time.
The whole tension, yeah. But the creator of CinemaSins pointed out that in Knives Out, Rian Johnson is trying to infuse a Hitchcockian idea of suspense inside of a whodunit.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much holding true to the traditions of Agatha Christie, the detective who comes in and interrogates everyone, and then toward the very end of the movie has this big denouement where he reveals the answer.
Yeah.
But it also gives the audience a lot more information as it goes along, and it's... Knives Out is a crazy structure.
Right in the middle of the movie, you're like, wait, what? You're telling us all this? How is there half a movie left? But it works.
Yeah, it works somehow. So it's a fascinating idea, the playing between how much do you tell your audience at any one time and how much you don't. I mean, another movie that you'll hear us talk about, I don't think the episode will be out quite yet when this episode does, but listen to us talk about The Sting, and we'll cover some of these same ideas.
And again, that's one where I'm not sure you could guess, but you see it, you're like, oh, okay. They gave us, I'm fine with you making a leap, like you couldn't quite get it there, but there's enough evidence that if you're a really good guesser, you could make something up.
Yeah. It's interesting though. I was reading earlier today that apparently the very first Sherlock Holmes story, A Study in Scarlet, didn't sell all that well in some, I mean, it did okay, but it wasn't great. And some people point out that it's actually is one of these stories where you probably couldn't figure it all out right at first.
Okay.
I imagine it was the first Sherlock Holmes, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, probably improved as he went along. But it's, you know, it is interesting. It's a trap that authors have fallen into from fairly early on.
Yeah, it is a hard balance because you don't want them getting it early, but you don't want them getting to the end and being like, oh, there was no way.
Yeah.
But there's a certain gray area about like, oh, you didn't give me enough, but you gave me plenty.
Yeah.
I've heard of authors who will start writing a mystery and not know what the ending is yet, which makes no sense to me.
I've heard that too. And yeah, I don't get that. Like maybe they start off that way and then once they figure it out, they do a lot of revising.
They could happen. Maybe you have to find your characters, find the motivations of all the characters, and then you go back and clean it up.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense.
It could be. Another medium that has a unique challenges for this, I think, is actually video games, which mystery video games have become very popular in recent years.
Yeah.
It started with the Ace Attorney series, which you're playing as an attorney, but those are basically mystery stories just in a courtroom setting.
Yeah. You're unraveling it through the interrogation.
And then it continued on with Danganronpa, and then there's some other... I've heard of a couple other popular mystery spinoffs. But those are very interesting. The way they have to guide the player through... The gameplay is figuring out the mystery, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to be able to give the clues in such a way that it's not just like, okay, well, that's obviously this. You know, you have choices that you have to select to present certain things or investigate certain things.
You still have to weight all the evidence.
Yeah. You want to give the player the opportunity to sort it out themselves and not make it blanket obvious, but at the same time, guide them to the correct answer in some way for people who aren't actually trained detectives.
You know, the interesting thing, I guess, that brought up to me, but it happens in mystery novels and movies as well, is that, I guess we call it the red herring, you know, the sidetrack, but also just that there are multiple characters who have motivations that seem suspicious, but they're unrelated to the main problem. You know, like, you're like, oh, she's suspicious. Oh, it's for this reason, not for the main.
Yeah.
Which I think is just interesting because when we're talking about truth, you know, mysteries are about truth, is the fact is the point you're trying to figure out is sometimes there's other things that seem like they're related, but it's not. It's the winnowing out of, okay, which of these facts apply and which of these facts matter, but not in this case. You know, like, oh, she had an affair, but that has nothing to do with this right now. Or, oh yeah, he was lurking around, but that had something to do with his work schedule.
That is an interesting philosophical point about mysteries as a genre, that they really do highlight logic and truth as very important things. Like, you can't have a surrealist mystery, at least not in the traditional sense. Like, if the mystery is going to work where someone is solving crime, you have to have facts. This happened and this happened. And because this happened, that means this is what happened.
You know, that's interesting, though, too. Just that we're talking about that a mystery only works if you find the truth. Like, you can't say, like, well, we think this is true. We hate that. Like, the whole, like, yeah, it's probably true. He probably did it. That doesn't ring right. That's the entire...
Then it becomes a drama and not a mystery story. I mean, people will probably pull out all kinds of examples of, like, where something was ambiguous. Usually, but honestly, most, even police procedurals, it's less, we're pretty sure that they were right in this, and more like...
Were they right to do it?
Yeah. Were they justified? Was there some tragic circumstances?
And again, that's an interesting thing, too, mysteries. Mysteries bring up the moral questions of, is this a crime?
Uh-huh.
Or what was your culpability in such a thing? And those are interesting questions, too.
Yeah. I'm going to use this opportunity to pick apart one of my favorite punching bags, Vertigo, real quick.
Okay,
though.
Go for it.
Because Vertigo is a movie that's set up to be like a mystery, a whodunit sort of thing. And you know, it turns into a psychological drama. And that, I think, cheats the audience from their expectations, which is why critics like it and why I dislike it so much.
Yes.
So, okay, I'll get off my soapbox for that one. But I find that very interesting that in even a medium like modern day video games, where sometimes, you know, you'll have some risque elements, you know, some things that aren't strong morality, and it'll still play with, well, is the rights or wrongs of things. I'm watching a Let's Play right now of kind of the spiritual successor to Danganronpa, okay, which I kind of like a little bit more so far. It's less horror focused than Danganronpa was. This game is called Master Detectives Archives Raincode. Long name. Japanese.
Yeah.
It makes more sense. Just goes weird things when you translate it to English. But like, again, it has that, and it also explores like, no, these are the facts. This is the truth. So the fact that you can't get away from that, I think is just really interesting in a postmodern age.
So two kind of related things. One is talk about the ambiguity people don't like in mysteries. I think my impression back when the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock Holmes was on, but back when like it looked like he died and then he did, and they kept showing possible ways he lived,
mm-hmm,
and they didn't bother to tell you which, that just frustrated people because like there's an answer.
Oh,
I don't want the fact that there could have been an answer. I want to answer like, what is it? If this is a mystery, give me facts.
Yeah, Stephen Moffat could get away with that sort of thing on Doctor Who. It was
different. Yeah.
Doctor Who is a very different show than Sherlock is supposed to be.
But and that also brings me to the fact, it's interesting, and I don't know if I have a point here, is just that it seems like I've seen recently a lot of mixing of the mystery genre and like supernatural, which I think is an interesting thing because we're talking about truth. We're talking about you're trying to get to the bottom of things, and there's a lot of video games, I think, that they make it's probably partly for drama, but like from a Christian point of view, there is a supernatural truth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, X-Files was about all this. There were mysteries every time, largely. Well, they're monsters of the week, but they were theoretically solving murder mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
And there was always like an alien or a Bigfoot or a fluke worm or something. but there, it's interesting when you mix these categories of like fairy tales or supernatural with this idea that, but there's a truth and we're going to follow it wherever it leads, even if it's ghosts or angels or alternate dimensions or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting point because even if there are supernatural elements, the idea that this is the way this particular world works.
We still need to find the truth, even if it's, and sometimes I suppose it could set up for a detective novel because then it's like the strange stuff we have to go into because we got to follow the truth wherever it leads,
mm-hmm,
whether everyone else thinks so or not.
Yeah.
And I think that's an interesting drive that we all will fully buy into.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Sherlock Holmes has some sort of line about that. Like, whenever all other possibilities have been eliminated, the last one, however improbable, is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess that's kind of similar in some ways to Professor Diggory's statement about, like, what's the logical answer here?
Yeah, or even ideas of, like, I had not actually read it, Cold Case Christianity, where it's like this cold case detective who is an atheist, follow all the evidence. They're like, well, here's a God. Whether you believe it or not, he took that same sort of mystery solving logic and followed it past where he thought he was going to find it.
Sure. I think that's a good jumping off point. We've been talking a lot about the puzzly aspects of it, but the atmosphere of mysteries is also a pretty important part. I mean, different mysteries will have different tones. Your Boxcar Children books or mysteries are going to have a very different tone than your NCIS, which is going to have a very different tone from The Hound of the Baskervilles.
But there is a certain amount of danger.
Yeah.
And I think the danger comes off either more like fun danger, like a Boxcar, like excitement, or even kind of chaotic, say, Clue. which great mystery, but gives you enough evidence. I mean, they could all have done it. but also, I think then comes off through that it can get that unease or that that atmospheric, like gothic almost.
Yes, gothic is a very good example. You know, Scooby Doo exploring haunted houses, basically.
Because while as long as the person's not caught, there's still evil out there or danger.
There's still the unknown.
Yeah,
and it's not settled. You know, it's the classic. And then there were none sort of scenario where they're trapped in a house at night and then the murder isn't revealed until it's morning, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And any of us could have done it.
Yeah. So, yeah, atmosphere, suspense, that's definitely a fun aspect of it.
And it brings a sense of, I mean, that's another motivation for the audience.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just a puzzle. You know, there's this edge of danger. Mm-hmm. I think it keeps you moving, keeps you on the edge of your seat.
Indeed. I guess the downside of that aspect right there is, I know my mom has talked about, if she watches too many episodes of NCIS or some other crime show, she'd be like, I just get so tired of these stories dealing with murder. Mm-hmm. I mean, inherently, that's a pretty violent act. You're talking about the depravity of humanity in a lot of these stories. There's potential for a lot of salacious, dark material there.
So let's talk about the murder for a second.
Okay.
How would you kill me? it's interesting, though, because the murder mystery is kind of the most fundamental mystery, because it's the most important in some ways. It's like, it's a thing that you have to solve.
Yeah. And it's also one of the most easily defined sorts of mysteries. Like, there's a very specific act that we're trying to unravel the details of this specific thing, whereas other sorts of crimes can be a bit messier. I'm not like in terms of like the crime scene, but like the details.
Well, plus it also requires a certain amount, unless it's accidental, of intense motivation. Like, if you're just stealing something, you might do it just for the kicks.
Yeah.
You know, the kicks defense.
is that a legal term?
No, that's from drugs are like that. It's a joke of that.
Okay.
Sorry, random deep dive. But I felt that, like, I bring up X-Files a lot, and I love the show. I'm not really sure I want to go back to it, partly because there is just so much death. And, like, I feel like nowadays that would bother me more than when I was a teenager watching it. You know, then it's just a plot device. Man, there's a lot of people dying here. And we, again, murder mystery thing, like, all genres have a certain amount of
suspension of disbelief.
And part of it's the fact that the murderer is just, on one hand, you're supposed to take it lightly so you can watch it. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you take it serious enough that, like, you want the murder to be found.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of the Murder, She Wrote conundrum. People enjoyed Murder, She Wrote because it's a fun main detective. She's good at what she does. But then on the flip side, like, you start thinking, it's like, how many people in her hometown have died through murders? Or why is there a murder everywhere she goes? It's a common talk about that. But yeah, it's the flip side
of that. And some mysteries can get very dark in other ways. They can add other, because obviously, murder is the main one, but then there can be dark causes for murder. You know, you get drugs or other unsavory material. And also, then you can also do kidnappings. I mean, there's other big, you know, people try different crimes, but usually it's got to be the ones that everyone hates.
Yeah.
And they can get kind of dark.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember there was one of the mystery series on PBS, you know, the mystery. They did a series on Brother Cadfael, which I think is based on some books.
Okay.
But, like, I remember it's very strange. You know, he's a monk. And at some point we stopped watching because, like, it's getting a little bit too, there's too many sexual things going on, or a little just a bit too violent, which is odd for a story featuring a monk.
The Broad Church. I know you haven't seen Broad Church, but some of those, I mean, they can be very heavy. Mm-hmm. But they are fundamentally mysteries, and they're really good at unwinding motivations and whatever. And they'd really do examine why would he do such a thing. Now, so there's a different angle there, but it also is analyzing these kind of heavy subjects.
Is that one mystery over the course of the season, or is it episodic?
It's basically one episode. Each season had, well, season one has a mystery. Season two, I don't remember. It seems like there was just a lot of fallout of season one. I'm not sure there was a mystery there.
Oh, okay.
But season three was another murder.
Okay, so they're investigating one...
murder for a season.
For a season, okay.
Two is very vague in my head, but one, three, those seasons are very strong. But again, they're not the sort of like, yay, we found the culprit. It's more like, oh, we found the culprit and it ruins this small town life. I mean, so it's in some ways subverts the traditional one, but for the purpose of examining the motivations and the fallout of these sorts of crimes.
Yeah. It has a place. I think that is the potential downside of mysteries. One last aspect I don't think we've touched on. We'll go back onto the positive side of things. The detectives themselves.
Oh, they're great.
They're great. They are the heroes of the story. And we talked before how sometimes they're just the quirky characters that you want to hang out with, whether that's Monk or the guys in Psych. Or...
Because if they were just boring, that's the exciting part is they've got to be something different. They've got to be motivated or quirky or abstract or over the top or somehow.
Yeah.
Like, the Dorothy Sayers one, he's very foppish, I remember.
Peter, Lord Whimsy? Or
yeah, Lord Whimsy, there you go. Yeah.
Or Father Brown. We got to mention J.K. Chesterton and Father Brown in here, who, of course, J.K. Chesterton brings into philosophy with his...
Yes, he does. Murder,
which is a unique feature, I think. I mean, a lot of mysteries will explore some aspect of human nature, but...
Yeah, there's usually some aspect about why they did and was it worth it, but...
Not very many will talk about theology like Father Brown does.
They probably should, but they do not. And I think because in some ways the story beats are relatively... I mean, there's a lot of wiggle room in mysteries, but it's basically a one-man show. I mean, you have the detective, and then you have all these usually colorful characters. You know, it really is all about the character. I mean, while it is a logic puzzle, it's a lot about creating an interesting cast.
True. I mean, you have your sidekicks. You can have the police person that the detective is working with, if he's not a policeman himself. Yeah. Whoever the suspects are. I mean, the sidekick and the police are probably going to be your mainstays if it's an ongoing series. Everyone else is just the cast that was circumstances for this particular mystery. The relatives, suspects.
More like we mentioned Knives Out. I mean...
That family.
That family.
A very dysfunctional family.
Oh, and then in Glass Onion, very dysfunctional friends that are all very like, what are you?
I've not seen that one yet.
And then Blunt, what's the direct detective's name?
Oh, the Blanc?
Blanc.
I don't remember his first name.
I'm so amazed that he's also 007. Because it's just such a unique sort of
character.
Like, he's just kind of really down to earth, but...
I can imagine that's one reason why...
Daniel Craig
wanted to do it, just because it was so completely different. And even different from his other non-Bond roles... that I think I feel like I'd seen him in. He's just way goofier.
Yeah. And I think that's what's interesting. A lot of these detective stories can also just be a little... It's funny because you have this death and this morality going on, but simultaneously, it's kind of a romp for some of a lot of these. It's sort of like that, let's figure this out. Let's have this goofy character disarm. It's this interesting combination of like serious and light, which seems very J.K. Chesterton. I mean, just this idea that like all the serious things should be taken lightly.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think that covers a lot of it. For a couple of guys who don't actually read a lot of mysteries, I feel like we had a decent discussion there.
Yeah, it kind of makes me want to read some more.
So if you were to set out to read some more, what would you like to read more of?
Well, I've read a lot of the Father Brown. I had a phase when I read some Agatha Christie, but I really would like to read some more of her. Because I've only read a couple of them. And
I think I've only read like one.
I've only read one and then listened to another. I think I've listened to Orient Express and read, and then there were none, or 10 Little Indians, depending on the title. Uh-huh. That might have been all I've done. I have a student currently who just is blowing through tons of Agatha Christie, which makes me kind of
interesting.
Want to look at those.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like the one I read was one I picked up while I was in Germany, because it was just one of the few English books that I could find. I didn't bring any books with me, but then we were in a bus trip, and it's like, I need something to do. And so it was good. But yeah, I like to do more of that. I mean, yeah, I feel like there's a lot that I don't even know all that well.
That's the thing. I'm sure there's great people out there that I don't even know. We have to just try some of those series. I mean,
yeah.
I remember that one series that was popular for a while with like the alphabet was going like C is for this and D is for that.
Super
I don't know if they were good or not, but people read them.
I mean, that Packard article, he mentioned a lot of authors I wasn't familiar with.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so there's a lot of good authors out there. I just don't know them.
Well, there's a challenge for you folks. Go tell us. Well, actually, first tell us if you know of some obscure mystery writer that we should really check out. Let us know. We'd be very curious.
We have a book club. We can suggest it.
That's true. That's true. All right, Nick, I think we're ready to move on into our next segments, which, of course, will be soundtrack. Okay, we've already been talking a little bit about Ace Attorney, so I figured it makes sense to pick a song from an Ace Attorney game. And I've done the basic Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney, I think, a couple of times. So let's go to his rival, Miles Edgeworth.
Oh, yes.
Who his first game was called Ace Attorney Investigations, Miles Edgeworth, which you've played. It's the only one of those games you've played.
Oddly enough, the only one I've played. I don't even remember how I picked it up.
It was before your DS.
Yeah.
At the time, yeah.
You just bought it used or something, I guess.
So this is a remix by Game Metal. It's a remix of Pursuit Lying Coldly. It's kind of his... Every Ace Attorney game has kind of a cornered or a pursuit, like when you've really got the guy.
Yeah.
And this is a remix of that from that game. And I hope you enjoy. And we are back.
Hello.
I hope you rocked hard to that, Nick.
Rock on.
All right. It's time to move on to our next segment, Once Upon a Scene. Last episode, we heard this spooky clip.
Yes. And now the beam will rid you of your fears, your thoughts. Your vital essence.
Hopefully that didn't give you any nightmares. Unfortunately, due to our schedule...
That came out like 4 days ago.
Yeah, so I'm not surprised we haven't heard much, although you did tell
well,
me.
Well, I asked my mom. She would tell me how much she loved the pun times, which you all should.
Indeed.
And I said, hey, do you know the one spawn scene? And she's like, yeah, Skeksis or something? I can't remember the name of the movie. I'm like, yes, you're correct. It was from
The Dark Crystal.
Yes.
Which is definitely a movie that will get under your skin.
Yes.
No matter what age you see it at.
And the TV show can too, actually.
That's true.
Yeah. In different ways,
yeah. All right, well, with that said, let's move on to a new bit of dialogue or new sound clip from a story. Here it is.
Offhand, I can deduce very little. Only that the words are written with a broad pointed quill pen, which is spattered twice. That the paper is of native Mongolian manufacture, no watermark. And has been gummed, if I'm not very much in error, by a bat who has been drinking Rodent's Delight. A cheap brandy sold only in the serious pubs.
Oh, amazing.
All right. Someone was deducing something. Who was it? You can tell us at derailedtrains@gmail.com or find us on Facebook or X, also known as Twitter.
Also, just hunt us down in the middle of the night. Slip us a note.
Don't do that. I'm gonna need my sleep here
pretty
soon.
That's true.
With that said, let's go on to our next segment. It's Cabe from the interwebs. All right, Nick, this is our segment where we explore some bit of creativity that has been found online.
Yes.
And you had an idea for this.
I did have an idea. It was kind of last minute, but there was a site I found that has 5-minute mysteries. So apparently you read this sort of, I don't know, clues, a story, and you're supposed to deduce who did it. And you also get points for how many clues you find. Like, okay. If you guess the right guy, good job, but you could just have guessed. But also trying to see, like you mentioned with the video games, understanding what the clues are and, sure, and reading them.
Okay.
So I guess we'll try one of these.
All right. So you're going to read the whole scenario and then we'll dissect it.
Yes. So this says, be sure to solve your first mystery. So we're going to try our first mystery, which maybe will be a...
Hopefully it'll be an easy one to start us off
with.
Yes.
All right. So I guess here's the intro. It says, mystery at the detective office. All right.
Okay.
You're the worst detective ever, said my brother. What did that make you, I shot back? You're working for the worst detective ever. My brother Larry didn't say anything. He just glared at the phone, which sat silently on his messy desk. It hadn't rung in more than 2 days, and that had been a wrong number. We'd been working together for 3 years, and we were starting to drive each other crazy. Larry came in to work with me, and we left together at the end of the day. And since we hadn't had a customer all week, we'd spent a full 8 hours every day cooped up together in our tiny office, and then all night watching detective reruns in the apartment we shared. That's apparently the intro. Okay. So this one, we're going to click attempt this mystery. The average score is 6 points.
Wait, there's a mystery in there?
No. Apparently that's the intro.
So now you're going to read the actual mystery part.
Okay. Like hit the button that says attempt this mystery.
Okay.
But just so you know, apparently average score is 6 points. 55% of people solve it. There are 4 clues.
Okay.
And the average time is 6 minutes and 30 seconds.
So there weren't any clues that intro part.
No.
Okay.
No. So here's the actual story, apparently, and time is starting.
Okay.
All right. Oh, that was the first. Okay, that's the first second. Then I can skip all that. There may have been a clue, but probably not. 3 years ago, the two of us had become famous after finding a stolen painting. It disappeared from a banker's Halloween party, and the reporters had a lot of fun writing about the haunted mansion. When we'd figured out the paintings were about, they'd naturally written more stories, this time celebrating Larry and me as brilliant detectives. But the banker was one of our neighbors, and our brilliant detecting had just been to notice him smuggling the painting to an art collector as soon as the police stopped watching him. It was my brother Larry who'd gotten the bright idea of cashing in our success by forming a detective agency. Hero Detectives Launch Investigation Office, blared one headline in the local newspaper. These guys are so cool. We'd framed the article and hung it up on our wall the day we opened. It was still hanging there over the phone that hadn't rung in 2 days. And then we heard footsteps coming down the hall. Larry looked at me, and the few hairs left on his head were sticking up with alarm. No one ever walked down our hallway, and least of all, customers. Was the criminal we'd locked away finally coming back for revenge? Larry nodded towards the door, signaling that he wanted me to answer it. And then he tiptoed towards the corner and hid in the closet. All right, I'm going to be Larry, okay, Tim? You can be everyone else.
Okay. I feel like this is a combination interwebs, a bit of story, and challenge accepted.
Yeah, we'll see how good we are. I was worried too. The glass on our door was frosted, but I could see the outline of an enormous body. And then a giant fist pounded abruptly on the wood. I'd had enough of this detective business and flung open the door. The mysterious guest had a bucket and a mop. It was our janitor, Joe. I sighed with relief, and Joe smiled back. "Did I scare you?" he asked. "I was trying to scare you." "Detectives don't scare easily," I said. And then Larry opened the door of the closet and re-entered the room. I gotta love that. Joe stifled a smile, and Larry said defensively,
"I was looking for clues."
Joe laughed and said, "Are you sure you weren't looking for coats?" Larry grumbled that next he'd try to locate his missing dignity. "How about finding this month's rent?" Joe suggested. I started to explain we were working on a big case. "Yeah, the case of the missing rent," Joe persisted. I could see Larry getting annoyed. But then Joe said, "No, I'm serious. I can't find this month's rent checks. Everybody stuffs them into that rent box on the wall by the manager's door. The box was fine when I left last night, but when I came in this morning, the box was open and empty. I think someone picked the lock and stole all the rent checks." Dun, dun, dun.
"Ours was in there already."
Larry lied.
"If it's missing, that's not our fault."
"Will you shut up and just listen to me?" Joe snapped. "Mr. Jorgensen always pays his rent in cash, so there's $1,000 in that box. If I don't find it, he's going to think I stole it."
"Why would he think you stole it?"
Joe reached into his gray overalls and pulled out an enormous set of jangling keys. "Janitors have keys to the whole building," he said sadly, "including the rent box. Now that it's missing, I'm the likeliest suspect." It was quiet for a second until Larry finally blurted out,
"Are you hiring us?"
"Tell you what," Joe said wearily, "from the way you're acting, I'm guessing you guys still haven't paid your rent yet. Am I right?" Larry and I both nodded. "Find that money before the manager gets here, and I won't tell him that you guys were late again this month. It was the best offer we've gotten all week."
"But how do we know you didn't steal it?"
Larry teased. "You don't," Joe said. "I'd like $1,000 as much as anybody." He slid his bucket into the hall and headed for the elevator. So these five-minute mysteries, apparently this one is a little over 5 minutes. At least reading out loud. I suppose reading silently, you get down to 6 minutes.
Maybe, yeah.
All right. Anyways, Larry and I ordered sandwiches. Man, they're really on the ball here. They're very...
I'm not impressed with their chances.
No, I'm not either. We got to help them. Okay. We always thought better after a good meal. We were happy and cheerful when they finally arrived. And as we munched away, Larry tossed out some theories.
"Maybe Mr. Jorgensen is late on his rent too,"
he said, wiping some mustard off his lips.
"So Jorgensen breaks into the box and then claims he's paid his rent already."
"Like what you tried to do."
"Exactly."
"Maybe you stole the money," I said. I took a bite of the roast beef sandwich, then offered yet another theory. "Or maybe the building manager stole the money. He's going to keep $1,000 and then blame the theft on Joe."
"Or maybe Joe stole the money,"
Larry said.
"And he's going to blame it on the building manager."
My head was starting to hurt. Just then, there was a knock on our door. Larry grumbled about his lunch being interrupted as he carried his sandwich with him to his closet hiding place. "Who is it?" I asked, swallowing the last of my roast beef.
"It's Mr. Jorgensen,"
said an elderly voice. From the closet, Larry called in a high-pitched voice.
"Mr. Jorgensen who?" "Mr. Jorgensen wants to wring your neck. Now open the door, you jerk."
I looked over at Larry and asked, "Why are you giving him a hard time?" Larry looked sheepish.
"I owe him money too."
Larry's a goon. All right. Mr. Jorgensen looked very angry when we finally opened the door.
"Hello, boys,"
he said. We weren't boys, but Mr. Jorgensen was nearly 60 years old, so to him, everyone looked younger. His sweater was probably older than we were, and even it looked angry. It was red with a crooked, darker red stripe that made it look like the sweater was scowling at us.
"Would you like a sandwich?"
asked Larry. Mr. Jorgensen shook his head.
"My stomach can't handle anything stronger than soup,"
he complained.
"You know what it's like to eat nothing but soup?"
In response... I do not. Okay. In response, Larry just took a big bite of his sandwich. This irritated Mr. Jorgensen, and he glared straight at Larry.
"So any chance you'll be paying me back that $500 you borrowed from me?"
Wow, Larry. It's I'm going to blame him.
"It's funny you mentioned that,"
Larry said, his mouth full, still full.
"It's funny you mentioned that. Yesterday, I came by your office. Just yesterday, I came by your office to pay you, but you were busy with a client, so I decided not to interrupt you."
You're lying.
Oh, sorry.
I'm so bad at this.
"You're lying,"
said Mr. Jorgensen.
"See this?"
He gestured toward his neck. Larry and I both stared at his ugly sweater. Poking over the neckline was about 2 inches of what was probably a red silk Hawaiian shirt. Mr. Jorgensen also had a dark suntan, a result of his recent trip to Hawaii, and he explained,
"I just got back from the airport, and I'm on my way up to the office now. I definitely wasn't there yesterday."
"Did I say yesterday?"
Larry asked.
"Oh, I meant last Christmas."
Mr. Jorgensen mumbled something under his breath, though I definitely heard the word stupid, and shuffled out of our office. You're making friends with everybody, I said. And once again, we heard footsteps coming down the hall. Returning to the closet, Larry showed the last... I just imagine, this is, man, I don't know what's wrong with Larry. Returning to the closet, Larry shoved the last food sandwich into his mouth. This time the closet was a good idea because the man at our doorway was the building manager. He was so mad that his face was red. By the time our door swung open, he was already shouting,
"Give me one reason why I shouldn't throw you two out of here."
Larry stayed in the closet. I sighed and said, "Because we're trying to help Joe find your missing rent money?" That slowed him down. He was probably just as mad about the missing rent as he was at us for missing rent. He thought for a second.
"I think it was somebody in the building who stole the rent,"
he said.
"Someone busted open the back door and went straight to the rent box by my office. So it had to be someone who knew exactly where to look. Someone like you."
"But it could have been anyone," I said. "Why are you blaming us?"
"Because you're the only one who haven't paid your rent this month,"
he said.
"And besides, I don't like you. Your brother is a big wise guy. Where is he anyways?"
"Oh, he's around someplace," I said, trying not to stare at the closet. Our building manager stomped out of the office. It was quiet for nearly a minute until I heard Larry's voice whispering,
"Is he gone?"
I turned in the closet, then said, "Look at us. We've got no money and everybody hates us. Maybe we should quit the detective business altogether." Opening the door to the closet, Larry laughed.
"Not today. I had lots of time to think in there and I figured out who stole the rent money."
All right. So, Tim.
this is goofy.
This is a goofy one. Now, I guess for the audience, well, I've never used this website before, but I think there are a variety of mysteries, and some are official and some are written by other fans of the site.
Okay.
So I don't know how this one is. I enjoy Larry. We talk about goofy characters for these. I could see an entire show where like the sidekick just hides in random spots and sees what he shouldn't see and stuff like that. I like that. So I have a thought. Do you have a thought?
About who stole it?
Yes. Well, I don't know who stole it, but I thought about a clue.
Okay.
So let's see here. We have to pick sentences that are clues and exonerate or suspect certain people.
Mm-hmm.
So the janitor says this.
Oh, it's nice. They have a suspect list here on the right.
Yes.
We've got Joe the janitor, Larry, Mr. Jorgensen, or the building manager.
I'm going to assume it's not Larry.
Yeah, you never know.
Now look at this. Joe the janitor says that Mr. Jorgensen always pays his rent in cash, so there was $1,000 in that box. But Jorgensen was in Hawaii till yesterday, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So what does that mean? That's my only clue.
Huh.
So either Joe's making stuff up. Wait, let's see.
When did it disappear? Because if he was gone all that time.
So let's see. The box was fine when I left last night, but when I came in this morning, the box was open and empty.
Okay, so it disappeared sometime between last night and this morning.
And stole all the rent checks.
And when did Mr. Jorgensen say he got back?
Let's see here. I just got back from the airport, and I'm on the way to the office now. I definitely wasn't here yesterday. Assuming that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it seemed like a Hawaiian shirt underneath.
Mm-hmm. So he was certainly in Hawaii because of the suntan, but did he really just get back? That's the next question.
Should we take everyone at their words? I mean, I'm tempted to take this to say that this exonerates Mr. Jorgensen.
I'm wondering, though, if there's something someone else... the only other person who talked about Mr. Jorgensen would have been Joe, right?
Well, look, this is interesting, too. According to the building manager, someone busted open the back door and went straight to the rent by my office. If someone actually busted open the back door, it's not the janitor. He has keys to everything.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. So that exonerates Joe. Mark that as exonerates Joe, I'd say.
Okay, so it's not Joe. Okay.
So here's another funny thing, though. The building manager says that we're the only guys who haven't paid our rent this month. But if Mr. Jorgensen just got back from Hawaii, that he wouldn't have had a chance earlier because he's been gone.
Yeah. So, and how does he know we're the only one if it's all in the box? Is the manager the one stealing the money? Well, listen, what Larry does this whole thing where they're talking to her. Okay, let's see. So he says, maybe Mr. Jorgensen is late on his rent, and so he breaks in the box to claim he's already paid. That's an option. Or maybe the building manager stole the money. He's going to keep the $1,000 and blame the theft on Joe, which is kind of true.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe Joe stole the money and he's going to blame on the building manager. And then Joe could have stolen it. No, not Joe. Larry.
You can identify clues without necessarily saying who they...
Yeah, we could just pick who we think did it and be
Well, done. I guess what my thought is, like, can you point out this is a clue without saying who it either implicates or exonerates?
No.
Oh, it has to be that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I do feel there's a clue there about
Everyone has paid except for us.
See, I think here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to say that Ms. Drogon just getting back exonerates. I'm going to assume he's telling the truth.
Okay.
And I'm going to say the building manager did it.
Yeah, if we're taking Mr. Jorgensen at his word, then the building manager is lying about everyone else having paid.
Yeah, but how do we...
I don't know how you prove that. But maybe that's not the point of this whole thing.
Where do you say everyone else...
You're the only guys who haven't paid this
that
month.
That incriminates Mr. The building manager. Yeah. Do we have anything for exonerating Joe?
We don't have anything exonerating me, Larry.
Oh, either. I know why. I know what we have. Way back at the top here. This here, look, we spent 48 hours cooped up together and all night watching detective runs.
Oh, yeah, okay.
There's no way Larry could have done it without.
Okay.
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 So we're going to choose building manager?
Yeah, let's go for that.
Okay, let's see. Your first attempt at mystery, your score here is what? Bum, bum, bum.
Your solution is correct.
Yes, and we've got three of them correct. So which ones? Okay. So this is incorrect. The janitor.
Oh, okay.
So
I thought that made sense.
So they must have. What I wonder what they use here. I bet they use for the janitor the fact that he has keys to everything. I bet they use that line to exonerate him.
So same idea.
Same idea. Just
you know, and that's a tricky thing with Ace Attorney sometimes too. Like
you have the right logic. Just
trying to find the right piece of evidence that they want you to connect to it. There might be multiple. The logic is consistent, but sometimes there's multiple ways.
Let's read the full solution here. Okay, let's see.
Oh,
here we go. I figured you stole the rent money, I told Larry.
When would I have had time to do it?
He countered.
You're here with me 8 hours a day, and you're watching TV with me all night.
Okay, you're innocent, I said. But what about Joe, the janitor?
He's not the guy.
Larry was confident.
He's got that big set of keys to the building, right? So he wouldn't have busted open the back door just to get the rent box. And it couldn't have been Mr. Jorgensen either, because he was on vacation when the rent box was robbed. In fact, it was all the money we owe that finally cracked the case.
Larry said proudly.
The fact that we're late on our rent.
Are you saying that our building manager faked the robbery? I asked, and Larry nodded vigorously.
If the rent box was empty when he came to the building, then how would he know we hadn't paid our rent?
Ah, nice. <Okay. laughs> So anyways, it was kind of a goofy story, but it's kind of a fun exercise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm impressed.
And apparently, there's a leagues here, and there's all these various ones. I mean, there's
a bunch, 50, yeah, on this 52 website.
52 pages of them. And I guess two a week come out. So this week's mysteries are, was this the one we just did? Mystery of the Detective Offices? Oh, we did this week's.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so only 55% solved it. And
we solved it.
We solved it. Good job, Tim. Okay.
Yay.
I might have to keep this website just for a fun little, like, hey, I got 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's impressive. I enjoyed that.
Well, Tim, for being a random, I came from the interwebs, I thought it worked pretty interestingly.
Yeah, no, I was happy with that.
I feel like I need to just write a story about this detective just hides in closets, though. I think that was pretty fun.
There's a story idea there.
There's a story idea there.
Well, since you've got an idea there, Nick, it's been a while since we did this segment, but we're going to do one last short segment today, and that is Project Update. This is a segment where we talk about our current projects.
Yeah, so many of them.
Yeah, so many of them that we maybe aren't doing.
Yes.
but since I'm host, you get to start.
Oh, I get to talk about what I'm not doing?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm teaching. That's my current project. No, I guess the main thing I didn't work on lately, which is not much, because really teaching not only takes a different type of brain space, but the rhythm of my life is so much different than it was before I taught. But I guess the thing I'm slowly eking away at largely is... We've mentioned on here before 100 letters.
I'm sure it's been name dropped.
Yeah.
I don't know if we had mentioned that you had finished a full novella.
Yeah, like 25,000 words. I finished whole one of there and I like it. It's different, but it's really needs, it's kind of an episodic setup. So it needs more before you can do anything with it, I think, or at least the promise of regular writing before I do anything with it.
Yeah.
So I've started on the second one and it's different than the first one. Which is the whole point, what I like about my idea of 100 letters, which is this, I won't try to explain it, but basically short novellas that kind of, almost like episodes of a TV show.
Uh-huh.
And what I like about it is that they're short and that they can each be their own thing. Like I don't have to keep a style, like, I mean, it'll be the same world and same characters, but you can try different things.
Mm-hmm.
The downside to my current way of writing is that also requires a good chunk of planning / like, it's not an easy write. I'm trying new things with it.
I mean, I remember my problem with what you've done so far is that it's really not a setup. It's more like a prologue, your first novella.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not even a pilot.
Yeah.
It's I don't want to go too much into it, but it hints at your setup, but it doesn't really actually start it.
No, the second one's probably not much better, but...
See, and like that's like the opposite way you get an audience hooked. It's more like...
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a slow burn.
Yeah. It feels more like it's an anthology show that's loosely tied together rather than an actual episodic thing.
Well, we'll see how the second one is also... We'll see. Because the trick is, I like the idea. It's kind of that sweet spot I found that I have about three ways I write stories. Well, I have my flash fictions. Then my short stories was like 2,000 to 5,000 words. And then you have like this 20,000 word sweet spot where you're like, Chill in the Wells was for me. And Zorzum, you know, like where you can do something new and it's sustained, but it's not like trying to write a novel. And then all my other novels are like 100,000 words. Like I have no in between. So I like experimenting.
At least you have no in between currently.
Yes.
I've never seen you actually try. Well, how long was Unremarkable Squire?
It's 100,000 words.
It's 100,000 words. Okay. But it doesn't seem like a gargantuan length.
100,000 is not gargantuan. It's just... Gargantuan is the third Strand Fred, which is 200,000.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
But the normal Strand Fred's 100,000, 110, I think.
So for people who don't necessarily think in terms of word counts, how long would you say like an average length novel is? Is that more like 50,000? Here's the problem.
They say 50 to 60, but I read a lot of fantasy sci-fi, and I feel like those tend longer.
Okay.
I think your 300-400 page books are... going to be closer to 80-100. That's a sheer guess. I don't know.
Closer to
80 to 100 would be my guess.
Oh, 80 to 100,000.
Yeah, that'd be my guess.
Okay.
Yeah. Like even the Star Wars novels that are three some, I feel like
300 pages.
Yeah.
Probably closer to 80, 100,000.
That's my
words.
Guess. I could be wrong.
Okay.
I could be wrong. But because I've only done it a few times. But, anyways, long story short, there are a lot of things I want to try in this, but it's also it's the sort of thing that takes sustained effort to try, and I haven't quite. Like, it took forever to figure out the second one, but I had like a million characters that weren't in the first one. And I'm like, okay, how am I going to do this? So, I guess right now it's kind of an experimental phase. Someday maybe people will see it.
Someday maybe people will see Strand and Fred again. But
someday people will see a lot of things.
I mean, we have been saying that since the beginning of this podcast, but you know, I'm not really one to talk.
Well, it's one of those weird things right now. I just don't. Yeah, it's a whole thing. That's a whole podcast. All right, Tim. What is your project besides fatherhood?
And podcasts.
Yeah.
Because I do put a lot of time into
You put a lot more time than I do into these things.
This one and Let's Finally Watch This. And we'll touch on that in a second. So I haven't had a lot of progress. I had really wanted one of my other projects this year to be more of my own novel. That's, we've talked before, probably whenever it was the last time we did a project update, it was right after I had finished Darien.
Prologue.
What?
The prologue, basically.
Yes, the prologue, basically, which I had been calling Darien's story for a long time since the beginning of this podcast, which was a short story / prologue that was the initial germ of it, but I have ideas for a novel that takes place after it that so far this year I've only written one chapter and I've started a second, not really much progress going on there yet.
But you have been running several podcasts.
But I have been doing several podcasts. Well, three this year, yes, if you include Weekly Hijack.
Yeah.
Which I do all the editing for it and a fair bit of the brainstorming, particularly for Let's Finally Watch This.
Yes.
Which is currently going on right now.
Go listen. It's good stuff.
Yes. Podcasts for casual movie fans who've always meant to watch classic movies. But that brings me to kind of an announcement we wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been doing Derailed Trains of Thought since September 2010.
Yeah,
so over 13 years now, and I've been thinking this whole year, feeling that it's time to come to a hiatus, take a hiatus from it, in part because we have a lot of fun doing it for sure.
We really do, yeah.
We enjoy it a lot, but at the same time, it has bothered me for a while that we've been doing this all this time and not really had a whole lot of growth with it. Not that you want to make something solely for the fact of finding an audience, but at the same time you want your creative energies to be helping people, and I do think we have some close friends and family who enjoy this podcast a lot, which is great, but I also feel like, you know, we could also just as easily be sharing our thoughts and opinions about storytelling with them just person to person, which is better in some ways. And for myself, too, I would like to have free up a little bit of creative mental space to work on my novel.
Yeah.
So with all that into consideration, we're going to wrap this podcast up, Your Old Trains of Thought, in a few episodes. We want to get to episode 150.
You're pretty darn close.
We are pretty darn close, and that's a nice milestone episode. I don't know what we're going to do for that episode yet. We haven't really talked about
it. Nope.
It seems like we should, considering we've done some interesting milestone episodes before.
Yeah, I don't know how. You have to do something different, because we've already done the 100th.
Yeah, that was, yes. We're not going to do that again.
No.
Exactly. So I don't know. We'll think about it.
Don't go bigger, go funnier, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Because that was pretty funny too.
Yeah. Problem. But we'll figure.
More intimate. It'll be Daryl Trains Unplugged. We'll just play guitar music and say poetic thoughts. Like, for sure.
You've been watching Muppets Mayhem.
I finished it, yes.
Congratulations. Wonderful. But yes, so that will be a few months from now, since we do this once a month.
And I guess we're not completely sure how November will work out.
Yeah, I mean, there's a possibility, you know, the fact that I have a baby coming, a child of my own.
And he does most of the editing on this podcast.
That is certainly a factor as well. So we'll see how the next few months play out. So maybe the episode 150 will come out February of next year. Maybe it'll be a little bit later. But just know that there is an ending coming. I say an ending. I don't think it'll be a forever ending, Lord willing, you know, if Lord Terry and he doesn't come home. I do think Dear Old Trains of Thought will be back at some point. I foresee our hiatus probably being at least a year.
Probably, yeah.
For just it to really feel.
Yeah, to go do spend our creative energies in other ways, or to reinvigorate, re-energize in some ways.
Yeah, I do imagine that when the podcast comes back, we'll use the time to revamp it somehow.
Yeah.
Maybe change up the format, maybe do a video version of it. I don't know. Leaving things on the table.
Lots of sponsors. I'll wear t-shirts with all the NASCAR sort of stuff.
But I'd really like to be able to focus a lot of 2024 on writing this novel, at least of my creative energies. So what does that mean for Let's Finally Watch This? I don't know.
Yeah. Get through this season two at least, so.
Yes, we're certainly going to finish season two, obviously. That should be done.
I mean, it's basically all watched.
Well, almost. Yeah, we're close. The last movie will be like beginning of December, and then maybe we'll do another wrap-up episode.
Be nice, yeah.
End of the month. I don't know about next year, though. We enjoy doing it, but like I said, I really want to not focus on podcasting as much in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just have to see, but we do appreciate those of you who do listen to this on a regular basis, and because, like I said, it's a lot of fun for us, and we hope it's a lot of fun for you. But until we have some more details, I think it's time to we'll wrap it up there. Looks like there's some kids that are gathering down the street there for some event. So the detective agency kids seem that they're going to go
solve a mystery
or solve some kerfluffle. Who knows what's going on?
Nice, no case too small.
That's right. But before we sign off, let's mention that our website is still derailedtrainsofthought.com. That will not be going away because we put a lot of work into that.
It's still there. Yep. Please contact us. You can also always contact us at derailedtrains@gmail.com. Hunt us down on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. And feel free to share those archives. There's a lot of great podcasts on there.
There is a lot of great podcasts.
Yep, of three different types.
Here's a question. Maybe I would love to hear in the next couple months from if any listeners have favorite segments or something that stuck with them. I think that would be interesting because there's certain things that we've done that you and I will bring up to each other sometimes. I mean, I know a classic is the Michael Bay does Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Fun.
That idea stuck in our minds for a long time.
Things like that.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, Nick, what is your soundtrack?
Okay. Yeah, you haven't heard this yet.
I'm not.
So do remind the audience, I have made this promise to myself since forever ago that I wasn't going to repeat a game, which just gets hard because like there's a lot of go-tos that I go to all the time. And it's go-tos.
Yeah.
You
like picking songs from different games, not doing the same game as often
as possible. It's just because.
Sure.
But I thought, I was looking around having a horrible time because I kept thinking of Ace Attorney or games that didn't have remixes and... But I came to Batman because he's a detective, right?
Okay.
So the NES Batman, I also picked it too because it's a very fun, it's done in the style of like more like the 60s Batman.
Okay.
And one of the things that I don't know how we talked a lot about, but we beforehand talked about detective novels, sometimes they're looked at as sort of light fiction. You know, it's kind of like not the heavy literary stuff.
Sure.
And I figured having a light, fun song from the great detective would not be a bad thing.
Okay.
Plus, it's a good excuse.
I'm curious what this is going to sound like now.
So this is remixed by MIDI. It's called Cleaning Out Axis. and I think you'll enjoy.
Okay, sounds good. Well, with that, we will bow out. Be sure to be tuning in. More Let's Finally Watch This is still coming your way next month. And until next time, here on Derailed Trains, this has been Tim.
This is Nick.
Bye-bye.